Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Trigger warning. The following episode contains graphic violence, strong language, and suicide. Discretion is advised.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Max.
And each Wednesday, we crack open a bottle of wine and dive in to some thrills, chills, and spills. This is Innocent Till Tipsy.
I am really happy you took over the Marilyn Monroe episode because I knew that was going to be a behemoth. We really wanted to talk about Marilyn, and I'm glad you've got it. So Max is going to be taking this episode, but we do want to remind you all that we do have a Patreon we just launched. We're releasing all of these episodes every Monday, ad-free, all out there for you. We also have backstage content. We're doing weekly live Q&As, so if you don't want to miss out on that additional content, make sure you head over and come see us there. But yeah.
And I am so excited. We're going to have so much to talk about on Patreon about this one. Like, there's a lot.
But
yes,
I can't wait. And this week, I think, too, is the Netflix movie that's coming out for Marilyn Monroe, right?
Yeah. Okay. The 28th. So it comes out the 28th. And then this will drop for Patreon on Monday. So you can watch a movie, then listen to our episode, then catch up with it because I'm watching the movie, too.
I'm excited. We should make sure we watch it before we get on and do our live stream Q&A so we can like talk about what really happened. Let's do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but I'm excited to just sit back and relax and hear you tell me a story.
So here we go. Okay. Well, Marilyn Monroe's mysterious death is packed with like so many, I don't even know, conspiracies. There's everything from sex and politics, and obviously she's in Hollywood, so that's why she's part of our miniseries now, but sex, politics, the Kennedys, Cuban Revolution, overdose, suicide, like it's just so much mystery. I had to like back up to the very, very beginning because to me, like a lot of her life, I didn't know that much about her. And I guess our era knows her for the white dress, right? Like we'll get into that. And not much more. Like, honestly, when I was reading through all the movies she was in, I'm like, no idea. But like her, just like the time that she was in Hollywood and now understanding more about her, it's so, well, it's very sad, of course, but it's also like, she was super ahead of her time, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we think of her as like, oh, the pinup, the dumb blonde, like the role, that role. Mm-hmm. And really, she was like a leader kind of for women and in the industry. Like she, I think I read her films were like grossed $200 million for the first screenings of her 23 films that she was in.
That's so amazing.
Yeah. I mean,
for the time period. Yeah.
For the time period. And yeah, I mean, she just goes from, well, we're going to dive in. I mean, she goes from like really small beginnings to like mega Hollywood fame, like an icon and a legend. So, all right. Let's talk wine first really quick because I'm going to need a glass to get into this. So what are you drinking?
I'm drinking the tail end of my Snoop Dogg today. We were going to do, it just wouldn't fit our naked wine pairing. So we're going to leave naked wine till next week. But yeah, so I have Snoop Dogg again because it's my favorite. It's what I had in the house. So
I think we decided that's like one of the best for the bang for your buck. It's actually a really, really good wine. It's what, like $15 or something?
Yeah, it's not bad at all. And then, of course, if you download the app and everything, you get Snoop giving you like a cheers and all of that. Yeah. And we did Snoop's episode a while ago because a lot of people don't know, but he was arrested for murder back in the 90s. So we already went all through that and drank his wine while we talked about it.
That's so nuts. And Martha Stewart has her wine, too. her 19 crimes wine. I want to.
That would be a fun episode.
I'll drink vodka, you drink Snoop.
That would be a fun episode, actually.
Oh yes, absolutely. I have Dao, and I realized I don't think we've done Dao on the show. Well, where's my camera?
We've done one Dao.
We've done Bodyguard by Dao.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So this is their 2019 Cab Sav. It's 100% Cab Sav in French, aged in French oak. So I know this is like one of my go-tos. It's usually $20 to $25 a bottle. And I got this one at Costco. So like when you need a, like, this is kind of like my giftable bottle where it's like a really nice wine. Cause if you buy
it's good.
Some of their other, some of their other wines, oh, my aerator, some of their other wines are like $200 bottles of wine. So this baby is like 25. See, I told you this piece of my aerator broke off. And every time I use it, I'm like, is this going to splash everywhere or what? I don't know where it goes. Oh, well. All right. Pour yourself a glass.
Oh, I got a glass.
And buckle up.
And buckle. I hope one's enough for this. I literally like.
Oh, I know. I'm like still pouring.
Oh.
All right. All right. All right. And this one, I know I like, it's like black cherry, coffee, and cola. So like all my favorite things. It's like pretty bold.
Trying to remember what this one even has in it. I just like it because it's got the perfect mix of like not too bitter, not too sweet. Red blend.
Mm. Cheers. It's fall.
Cheers. Yeah. Ah.
Okay. Yeah. And I know, like I said, we've covered a Dao wine before, but they are super, they have a super cool story. I know we covered that before. Like they're two brothers that came over as immigrants and like literally started winemaking in their garage and then went into like computer engineering or something crazy. And one's like the business leader and the other one's the more creative brother. And so, yeah, still owned by the brothers, owned and ran by the brothers. Really cool. And it's wine season in Napa. All my whole feed is like filled up with everyone crushing grapes. I'm sure there's a more technical term for that. Mm-hmm. But like all the wineries that I follow, I wish we were in Napa. We need to do that next
fall. Are you going to Napa this season at all?
No, I go in the spring. Right? I know. Oh. Usually I go for that Bottle Rock Festival. Mm-hmm. And that, because of COVID, was in the fall. Like 2021. Mm-hmm. And then so it was in the spring this year when it normally is. But yeah, I was like addicted to Napa when we went in the fall that year. So pumped. Need to go back.
Yeah.
All right.
Tell me the story.
Oh, okay. This is so insane to me. She had, I don't know, like, we know how this ends, right? That she dies and they rule it a suicide. So we're just going to start out with that. If that truly were the case, she had a very tumultuous upbringing and a very like volatile life and career. Mm-hmm. And she was really like, was up against a lot. So she was born as Norma Jean Mortensen. Mm-hmm. And we know her like a lot of times as Norma Jean, but Norma Jean Mortensen, June 1st, 1926 in LA to Gladys Pearl Baker. But first, let's talk about Gladys.
Real quick,
do you know much about Gladys?
I don't, but real quick before you jump in, I saw a TikTok this week that blew my mind. It was a TikTok of the Queen meeting Marilyn Monroe. And I didn't know they were born the same year.
Holy
smokes. So that's, isn't that
wild
to think about?
The time,
yeah. That's so weird. Yeah, it just to me to like, because you, she's forever encapsulated as this very young woman, you know? So it's just interesting to me. But anyways, tell me about Gladys.
Mm. Yeah, because when she dies, she's 36, yeah, I want to say.
Super young.
So young.
Yeah.
And 36. So yeah, Gladys, her mom, in 1917, she gets married at 15 to an abusive man. So probably kind of like par for the course at the time, like marriage was pretty young, but he was 9 years older. And they have two kids together, Robert and Bernice. So that would be Marilyn's half siblings. But they file for divorce and like shortly thereafter, 1923 or 21, like, you know, they file, but it takes a while. She gets full custody of the two kids, but he actually kidnaps them and takes them. I know, right? Who knew? Takes them to Kentucky with him. So, yeah, like Marilyn doesn't even meet her half siblings. Or doesn't even know she has a sister until she's 12 and doesn't meet them till she's like 17 or 18. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So back to Marilyn. She Gladys, after her divorce in 1924, then marries Martin Edward Mortensen. That's why Marilyn gets Mortensen name at first.
Okay.
But they separate like months later and divorce in 1928. But get this, in 2022, DNA testing indicated that Monroe's father wasn't Martin Edward Mortensen. Gladys had an affair.
Oh my God.
I know, right? I was like, I had to like write down dates and names. I like almost had to draw this like family tree because they just kind of come out of nowhere and like no DNA. So until 2022. So Gladys had an affair with a coworker, Charles Stanley Gifford, in 1925. And then remember, Marilyn was born in 1926. So that's who her actual bio father is. But she actually takes her mother's name. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that too, but she takes Baker for a while.
That's so the name I know. I didn't know
Norma Jean Baker.
Norma Jean Baker, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's strange that she takes, well, I mean, no one knew that that wasn't her. Well, I mean, Gladys maybe knew, but like no one knew that Mortensen wasn't her father anyways. And so I'm going to save you a lot of time because honestly, there's so much about her life. To think that she lived this life in 36 years, and I don't want this to be like a book report, but there's like so much history in her life, like that she did all this or lived all this in 36 years. So it starts out like her childhood sucked. It seemed unstable or like, I don't know. She didn't have great roots, like to say the least. Her mom starts out with her mom, but around the time when Norma's 7 or 8, Gladys has a mental breakdown. She's actually diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia.
Oh, man.
And she's like in and out of hospitals there on after. And so Norma becomes a ward of the state. She actually Gladys and Norma they had boarders. They had like tenants, housemates for a while. So she actually stays at her house with those people for a while, which is, they're actors. They're like lodgers, I guess we call them actors. George and Maude Atkinson, and they have a daughter, Nellie. And she may have been sexually abused at that time. I mean, remember, she's just basically like this girl living there with boarders. So that's not inconceivable. But as I mentioned, her mother's friend, Grace, steps forward to take over Gladys's affairs as Gladys is like in and out of hospitals. And after 16 months with those lodgers, then she goes and lives with Grace.
Okay.
All right. They already have like a lot going on in their house. And actually Grace doesn't feel like she can take care of Norma. And so she takes her to an orphanage. Isn't that heartbreaking? Oh my gosh. I listened to a tape of Marilyn recounting this and she's like, they pulled me in screaming to the orphanage and she was screaming, I'm not an orphan. I'm not an orphan. And so like Grace like left her there. Just dropped her off.
And I'm sure was she at that point?
Yeah, she's not that old. She's it's 1935, so she's like 11 or 12.
Oh God.
Yeah. Yep. And after that, you know, the orphanage is like, we think that Norma would be happier with the family. Like, no shit. I'm sure it's an okay orphanage. They said it was like not like a terrible, terrible place, but it's, you know, they're not in like a nuclear family.
No. And I'd say there's a reason we don't really have orphanages anymore. Like that's not really a huge thing anymore. We have the foster care system, which obviously has its huge faults, but at least you're being put usually with a family. And like, yes, it's got some issues, but
it's got that family structure.
Yeah. There's a huge reason I would feel like why they've been pretty much abolished, but
so they encourage Grace to take her back home, and Grace becomes her legal guardian in 1936, but doesn't take her out of the orphanage right away. She waits till summer 1937, and Grace and Norma's like 11 or 12 at this point, because some of these are like loose dates, at least summer, fall, whatever. But she only lives with Grace Goddard and the family for a little while, several months, because Grace's husband, Doc, molests her.
Oh, my God.
You're like, I can see why she would have issues with men. Like her whole life. Like, doesn't trust men. Like, just has this sad, sad history of men in her life abusing her, abandoning her, using her.
Yeah.
And, you know, she just wants that family and she just wants acceptance.
What I was just about to say was, like, you can also see why she's trying. Like, you can see from her hopping and her marriages later is, like, she just wants that nuclear family and she's not getting it. Like, God, some stability. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
So all in all, Norma Jean is reared by like 12 different sets of foster families, foster parents, different homes. She is bounced around. Mm-hmm. And I guess she says in like an interview too. So another like source that I watched, it's called, I watched it multiple times. Now I can't think. Hang on.
You have to. That's the thing. When I write the script, sometimes I'm like, let me go back. Or sometimes I'll watch
so many
like,
times.
We're about to do our anniversary episode. And I have already been diving into it. And I watched this one clip about Ryan Ferguson. And I was like, I just bookmarked it. I was like, I'm going to have to rewatch that. There was a lot
over and over and over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For sure. And this was super interesting because it's actually on Netflix. You can go watch it for yourself. It's The Mystery of Marilyn Monroe, The Unheard Tapes.
Oh,
it's so interesting because it's an author, Anthony Summers, author of Goddess. He does 1,000 interviews and 650 of them are recorded tapes. And it's like later after her death, like closer to 1982 when they reopen her or like re-examine if there should be a criminal investigation to her suicide. I'm going to use like air quotes. And so he interviews all these people from her past to like build up a better understanding of what may or may not have actually happened. So
this is probably something you're going to go over later, but did she leave a suicide note? I can't remember.
No. Yeah. So there's all these interviews that are incorporated in that documentary. I highly recommend it. I mean, I think honestly, if you listen to our podcast, I needed the chronological order of her life to better understand what happened to the tapes or who the hell on these tapes is like talking or why it matters. Mm-hmm. In the beginning or somewhere in there, she's talking about why she became an actress. And it makes sense. Like, she had such a shitty childhood. Some of her foster family, she says, used to send me to the movies to get me out of the house. And I'd sit there all day and way into the night up in front with the screen so big, a little kid all alone. And I loved it. And so that's why she wanted to go into acting, because she spent like, that was her like safe place. Her escape was the movies.
Yeah. No, I vibe with that so much on a personal level, because I don't know if you know this, my mom survived like stage 4 breast cancer when I was a teenager. And during that time, I hardly remember any of my mom's fight with cancer, even though she went through surgery, chemotherapy, and then radiation, because I got so obsessed with the Star Wars series. And I used to know all the alien names, like everything. I was obsessed with it. And I feel like it was because so much was going on at home. I was just like diving into something that could just like let me numb myself out from what was happening. But yeah, luckily she's fine now. She's been in remission for like years now. But I can relate to that. I would be like, I'm not dealing with this. Like,
it's your escape to fantasy. It's to escape the like reality of what you're going through in a decently healthy way, right?
Yeah. There was other things, obviously, like especially as a teenager, you can get into. But yeah, crazy.
So she knew she wanted to be an actress. And fast forward to 1942, that company that employed Doc Goddard, you know, she went to live with Grace. It's Grace's husband. He molested her. But that's her legal guardian, Grace. His company relocates him to West Virginia, so out of California. And because of California child protection laws, they couldn't take Norma Jean with them.
Oh.
So horrifying. She's about 16 at this time. She can't go with her legal guardian. They're going to ship her back to the orphanage.
Such a dumb question for you. Was anything ever done about him molesting her, or was it just like, no, nothing at all?
No. I mean, like, God. I think a lot of, and we even know now, like, there's a lot of like molestation that doesn't go reported and it's awful. And so no, I didn't see anything like that. Anything ever came of it. She just grew up with that. I think an interview though that I did see of her said she didn't really realize or like internalize that it was so wrong. She said she was more curious about sex, which also kind of makes sense, like given her like sex bombshell image, that she realizes that's kind of how she gets her way too.
And I saw something years later about her too, where she, I think later in her life, she basically became asexual, like concerning it. Like sex was more of a transactional thing for her than it was anything more, from what I saw in her interviews and everything, because she thought men were basically very silly, that they could be like, you know, it was very easy for her to.
Well, she's manipulated by men a lot, obviously, too. Yeah. She's like used a lot for her sexuality and for sex. So that makes a lot of sense. So in order to avoid the orphanage, she marries the Goddard's 21-year-old neighbor, James Doherty. This is husband number one. And she's 16. God. So she's like, orphanage or marriage? Okay, fine, you.
Yeah.
And in so that's 1942. 2 years later, Doherty, her husband, is shipped over the seas, like for 2 years. And so she takes up a job at Radio Plane Company, which is a munitions factory. And there a photographer comes from the US Army Air Force's like motion picture like company to do some like morale boosting shoots for the troops. And they capture some pictures of her. They don't actually use her picture, but she realizes that she wants to pursue modeling. And that's when she signs with an agency in 1945.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So she wasn't like found from that shoot, but she just realizes like, hey, this is the thing for me. And they, her agency deems her, of course, as we know her, like more suitable for pinup versus like high fashion. And that's when she starts modeling and being in advertisements for men's magazines. And so that's really where she changes her image to, like the hair that we know, like the blonde bombshell hair. And by 1946, so like a year later, she's appeared on 33 magazine covers and, starts using the name Jean Norman. She has so many names, as I was like, when did she change her name? I'm like, whoa, where'd that name come from? So, yeah, she really quickly like took to acting, modeling. Obviously, she's gorgeous. And that's in 1946, after her modeling like career starts to take off, she starts to get into acting. You could do like so many episodes on her acting career alone. It's such a short career. Like she dies at 36, but she does, as I mentioned, like 23 pictures that are gross 200 million. And in that short amount of time. So 1946, like it's nuts. And that's where, like, I'm not going to go into the weeds, but basically she gets in a contract with 20th Century Fox. And that's where she selects the name Marilyn Monroe. It's actually like her and, it's not her agent, but it's like someone from there. They remind her of Marilyn Miller, who's like a Broadway star. And then she takes her mother's maiden name, Monroe.
Okay.
So it was Gladys's maiden name.
Okay.
And that's how we get Marilyn Monroe. Yeah. 1946. But she doesn't actually change her name till like a decade later.
Okay.
But she just starts using it as her stage name. So if you're following me, she was Norma Jean Mortensen on her birth certificate, baptized as Norma Jean Baker. Then changes her name to Norma Jean Doherty when she gets married. And then when she's like around 20, selects Marilyn Monroe, and then like 29-ish, changes her name legally to Marilyn Monroe. That's how we got to Marilyn Monroe.
Wild.
I know, right? And it's so nuts that she does go through such a transformation from like child to model, or I guess like child to like teen and married and then model and then movie star. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, like she's done so much work in films. Like we could do a whole series on all her films. I'm sure there's podcasts for that, but I don't want to turn this into a book report. So keeping it to the details you need to know. Here's what you need to know. In early 1952, I think you asked me about this. Like she marries or starts like dating, but then marries New York Yankees. He's a retired New York Yankees baseball player,
Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah. Yes. And she finds herself at the center of a scandal because in March 1952, she reveals that she posed nude for a calendar in 1949. So like kind of prior to this. And that's like kind of scandalous at the time because he really wants like a woman that he can control and that is like sweet. And she's definitely like her career is taking off as this like sex symbol. But she, I was really impressed with like her drive to work hard and perform in the industry because she was at some point like sick of being typecast as that blonde, dumb secretary, beauty pageant contestant type role, that typecast. And she pursues other roles. I didn't know this. She played a fish cannery worker and a deranged babysitter. And she was taking acting classes. I know. And training with like a famous mime. Like
that's so crazy.
Mime, I guess. Not me.
I'm surprised she was able to do that because I don't know if you know. So Elvis Presley, and we just saw from this movie. Did you see Elvis yet?
No.
Okay. So in
I've
the
been
movie,
to Graceland, though, I feel like I know it.
Oh yeah, Elvis yeah. Is- so I wish they had. I'm glad they went through it. His relationship with Colonel Tom Parker and how evil Colonel Tom Parker was, and basically sold him into all of this stuff. But he always, Elvis always wanted to do more serious or different movie roles. But Colonel Tom Parker never let him. It was always the singing. They were like, he was like, no. Do you know you got to be in a movie with us with singing? So I'm surprised Marilyn was able to kind of like put her foot in the door of other avenues instead of just this like dumb blonde, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, she really pushes for it. And then like also the studios aren't very, I don't know, like there's always this ebb and flow, I guess, or like push and pull with the studios because she's becoming an it girl. So she kind of gets her way, but also she's a woman. So she doesn't really get her way because it's super misogynistic at the time.
Yeah.
But she gets a reputation of, being late and hard to work with because, again, like she's this it girl and she wants to go off script and she wants to be an actress. And it just takes her a lot of roles till she feels she gets it right. But that's like really annoying to everyone around her. Yeah. And so to alleviate her anxiety, like then she starts to feel like she's not doing a great job. Right. So to alleviate that anxiety, that's where she really gets into barbiturates, amphetamines. They say she was like on upper, she was on downer, she's on sleeping pills, she's on like drinking, she has insomnia. And that just makes anxiety worse. So it just compounds that problem. And she doesn't really get into full addiction until like 1956. So like later, but this is kind of where it starts because she's on her rise to fame and she's like, has this like high expectations for herself and others have that expectation for her.
And
like basically, you know, that behavior of being late and going off script and stuff like makes her a target for sexism and bullying by her male co-stars. So it sucks. It's like she's trying to work hard and then it's just compounding issues.
I don't know if you saw, why can't I think of his name? The horror director that did Psycho.
Hitchcock.
Hitchcock, thank you. Wow.
who needs a brush up on their history?
Me now. Didn't he have issues with Marilyn? Didn't he work with her on a film and then they had like huge butting heads, or was that someone else that I'm thinking of?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know if it's Hitchcock. I know he worked with some major directors. Obviously there's like names I recognize and I didn't realize why till later. So I don't know if she worked with Hitchcock.
Let us know in the comments if you know.
Yeah, please do. Because again, like I have so many notes and I was like cutting to make this only about the mystery. Really, like she just led such an interesting and intriguing life. 1953 is her big year. That's where she has a movie. And this is like what I feel like we know her for. So, and I didn't realize it was this movie, but so I say that, but then still Niagara is where her makeup artist really developed that trademark look. those dark brows, like really pale skin, glistening red lips, and the beauty mark. So there's, I didn't realize this about the beauty mark. They're like, is it hers? Is it real? Is it not? She had a small beauty mark on, I think it'd be like her left, her left cheek. And in her early career, she covers it up. But then like around this time is where her makeup artists, just they define that look and they're like, nope, we're going to accentuate it. And that's when like other women, of course, she's like a Hollywood icon, start like doing a beauty mark through makeup. So she had it, she owned it, and she just accentuated it, like accepted it later in her career. So, well, it's kind of cool. I'm like, yeah, that's what we know her for, that beauty mark.
Yeah.
She was in a satirical musical comedy, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. So we know her for that Diamonds Are Girl's Best Friend, you know, that, that's from that movie. So she did have a big year. And then How to Marry a Millionaire, was another movie that was that year. She, like, she was working hard. Can you imagine? Like, I don't know that many A-list celebrities that put out three movies a year.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Maybe, maybe they do like a large movie and a small project or something, but I feel like it just takes a lot longer, but she was working. And get this, like 1953, we know this as her like big, big year is when Hugh Hefner featured her on the cover and as a centerfold of the Playboy issue, the first Playboy issue.
Yeah.
But get this, she did not consent.
Yeah, I know. I did a whole, I don't know if you saw me like grab my notes, but I actually wrote on my notes. I was like, the Hugh Hefner thing. I was wondering if you were going to bring it up because I did a whole TikTok series on it because it was so dirty. And you know, he's buried right beside her, right?
Sick. No, like he's disgusting. I mean, maybe she embraced it later. I don't know that much about it. Do you know? But like those.
Yeah, I do.
She did not consent to that.
So she had taken those photos when she was still Norma Jean Baker, and it was just to pay the rent. And she had the photographer promise they would never be used for anything. Yep, these nudes, they'd never be used for anything. Well, I think Hugh Hefner bought them for, he bought them for a penny. Like, he bought them for nothing. And he released it, and she didn't find out until it was released. And she called him, begged him to stop the whole, well, I don't think she got through to him because I don't think either of them ever spoke to each other fully. But she wanted them gone, and no, and that's how he got started with Playboy. That is what,
yeah, because it's the first issue. Yep,
yeah, yeah.
And the photograph on the covers, one of her photos or photo submits from the Miss America pageant in 1952. So it's not, I didn't realize that until then. And I guess it's another example of like a man taking advantage of her,
and she didn't get paid at all for any of this. Yeah,
he bought the photos. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then he bought that plot right beside her, and it's so disgusting to me that he is buried right, I believe, next to her, and there's a man buried above her, and he's buried face down. Ew. Which is just because she's in one of those, like, you know, she's
in like a
cemetery, and yeah, it's like a what do they call it? It starts with an
it's
M.
Not a mausoleum, but it's like an entombment.
Yeah, the box. Yeah. So gross. But yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what the hell? Seriously? But I wrote in my notes, yada, yada, other films, because I know there's a podcast for that. So back to men. On January 14th, 1954, she and Joe DiMaggio get married and they begin filming like the famous film, The 7-Year Itch.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. And the studio like arranged for like a publicity stunt, like a promo, basically for her to go to New York. That's where she's got that iconic white dress. They have her standing on the subway gate, right, on Lexington Ave in Manhattan. The shoot lasted a few hours, and by the end of it, there's like 2,000 spectators. Joe DiMaggio is there. He is pissed. He's pissed. He's pissed because she's, you know, like showing her underwear or like her, like under her dress. And he's known for being super jealous, super possessive, and beats her up after that.
Yeah, in the hotel after.
And her makeup artist like recounts it. They're like, did he hit her face? She's like, no, he pushed her around. He pushed her down. He did things that would like hurt her that could be covered. And so the makeup artist is like, yep, we just patched her up with makeup. And that's so sad to me because again, knowing that she was really, really attracted to Joe DiMaggio. She talks about it like in her tapes that she was in her, interviews that she was immediately like attracted to him from across the room. And she's like got this just like full-on crush for him, marries him, and then he's a jerk to her, like a dick, seriously. And so they file for divorce 9 months after being married. They like go and tour Tokyo. She's like adored by the troops, like all of this, and just not by him.
He just, his ego couldn't take it. He couldn't be with a powerful woman like that. Like that's so.
Because he's a retired player. Like, yeah. I know. Yeah. Men. So. Mm-hmm. But Sia Jo, she's on to doing bigger and better things.
Good for her for leaving him too at that point in time. Like, I'm
9 months too, because how humiliating, you know, like in that time, like women, she's already been divorced once and now she's this like public figure and she's getting a very public divorce. It's sad because her interviews too, they ask like, oh, are you still friends with Joe? She's like, I can't ask. I'm done, guys. Like, she's heartbroken about it. It's so sad to watch. But like I said, she goes on to do really cool things by herself. She actually, because she's got like, you know, industry clout, starts her own production company, MMP, Marilyn Monroe.
I never
knew that.
Oh, that's amazing.
It kind of goes through its own like issues, you know. She's got a rough start. She tries to produce some films, like she does do like fabulous work through that too, but it's also challenging for her, you know. She's kind of a trailblazer. So here's what else you need to know. Despite that ongoing divorce process, she continues her relationship a little bit with Joe DiMaggio. You know, like I said, she's kind of heartbroken. She dates Marlon Brando, and like
I didn't know she dated Marlon Brando.
Me neither. No idea.
Wild.
And her next husband to be is playwright Arthur Miller.
Yes.
Yeah, this gets wild. Like, I thought, like, how could this get crazier? It can get crazier. He's a playwright and he's like big time at this point. He's like a really big deal. And he has a wife. So it's an affair. But the affair gets serious after her divorce is finalized in October 1955, and he separates from his wife. And get this, the studio's like, don't do this, don't do this. Arthur Miller's been investigated by the FBI for allegations of communism. You got to remember, what? This is like Cold War era time. I know, like, yeah, and he's super left. He is like pro-communism, and they're like, FBI?
So that's
how Marilyn's file gets started. She had a file with the FBI.
Oh, see, I'm excited. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I know.
Yeah.
Yes. So super left wing. And she actually does have some pretty left-like views, which gets interesting later. We'll come back to this. Remember this. Arthur Miller. He's Jewish. So they actually get married in the court in June 29th, 1956.
Did she convert for him?
She
did. Interesting.
She does. So they have a Jewish ceremony like a few days after that with like his literary agent at her house. And Marilyn looks so freaking gorgeous. She's just like this sweet looking bride. She is like, she writes hope, hope, hope on the back of her wedding photos because she is just like, I know, tears. She's just like so into it. And the picture, she just like looks so sweet and hopeful. But yeah, she did. She converts to Judaism, and that's why Egypt bans her films. They're like, it's not the news. It's that you're Jewish. Get these films out of here. Yeah, they ban her films.
Whoa. So I do have a question. But they had a big age gap, though, didn't they? Or am
I thinking
one another? They did. Okay.
I feel like he's older than her. I have it in my notes somewhere. We will find that.
That's okay.
Sorry, I don't know right now. They do. I feel like she's like 29-ish and he's like 40 or something. Significant enough that, again, it's like a power thing because he's this playwright and she's like a muse for him. And he later on talks about, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, so just forgive my brain notes. He leaves his wife, you know, basically for her, and he has like high hopes and she has high hopes for the marriage. And later on he's like, you know, I thought she was an angel, but I guess she's like the same as my ex-wife and she's a whore. Like he literally writes this in his notes because at some point they work on a film together and that's his like acting notes, and she comes across them and that like ruins her. She recounts that to her psychiatrist like many, many times about how bad that hurt her because she feels like she failed at her marriage again. And she just wants family. Like she really just wants this, like, to be loved.
Mm-hmm. Listen, don't date artists, because I dated one artist and they're fine when you break up. Initially, they're like, oh, it's fine. And then like a couple months later, they unleash stuff on you and you're like, oh my God, it's wild.
I know. And she just keeps getting hurt. It's so that's what I feel like. I mean, she is so well-meaning, so hardworking. Yeah, like I said, she owns her like badass. She just owns her own production company and is like this icon, and then she keeps getting beat down by like all these men that she crosses paths with. So she starts filming again, and the misogyny, right? Like the director tells her, all you have to do is be sexy, and she's like, no, I want to be an actress. And so again, her dependence on drugs escalates again. She has a miscarriage. She actually had endometriosis. Maybe, I don't know. It didn't really go into detail if it was like later on miscarriages are attributed to endometriosis, but it sucks because she just wants this family and she wants this marriage to work. So she is filming. She returns from England and is on an 18-month hiatus to focus on family life. She has an ectopic pregnancy and another miscarriage later that year. And then she's hospitalized briefly due to barbiturate overdose. So like fast forward when they say, oh, she was suicidal, she's hospitalized for drugs, like she's kind of been through the ringer.
She has.
I can see like why she's depressed.
Yeah, life has not been a cakewalk for
this woman.
It's
not easy for her. This is when 1958, so we jumped to 1958. She's filming Some Like It Hot. You've heard of this. She wins a Golden Globe for this. And she mentions in one of her interviews, well, it's not an interview. It's in that documentary. It's an interview with her psychiatrist's son. So she's like really close with her psychiatrist. And she actually kind of like makes his family her second family. So he has a daughter, he has a son, he has a wife, and she goes over there for like dinners. And it's so crazy because she's like, the psychiatrist's daughter is talking about like, yeah, we were talking about crushes. And I was talking about my like crush. And she was talking about having a crush on, fast forward, just bookmark this, the general.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The general.
The general.
Oh, JFK.
We'll see. We'll see. So so it's kind of nuts that she's like, that's like later. Right now, I was just bringing it up because she's talking about when she was filming Some Like It Hot. That was the happiest time of her life. She was actually pregnant during that time, according to the psychiatrist's daughter, like recounting what Marilyn told her. And so she takes a little hiatus in 1959. Films another comedy, Let's Make Move. Like, again, can you keep up with these movies? She's like working.
To backtrack a little bit, isn't that like crazy unprofessional that her psychiatrist had her over at his house?
And yeah, according
to now. Personal relationship. Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I'm like, back then, so would that have been okay?
It's not okay then. It's like definitely frowned upon then. But he actually defends it, saying, well, I could have had her hospitalized. She was like a working actress. She'd be in, she would have been hospitalized. It would have ruined her image. It would have ruined her career. So instead, they're like, why didn't we have her meet you at the office and stuff? They're like, well, because we felt like it was a good idea for her to be like grounded by this family setting, come okay. be part of our family. And okay. maybe that will keep you from spiraling into depression. Maybe that will okay. give you someone else to talk to. That's okay. kind of like the rationale, I guess.
Okay.
So yeah, while she's filming this other this musical comedy, Let's Make Love, during the shoot, she actually has an affair with her co-star, Yves Montand. I'm probably saying that wrong. Sorry, guys.
Okay.
And it sucks. Like, I feel like the studio kind of uses that. They use that as her publicity campaign, because the film's called Let's Make Love, and she's like has this affair with her co-star. So,
yeah.
dude, her ruins her marriage too. You know, he's having an affair. She's having an affair. Like, this sucks. Yeah. That's where they start filming. film The Misfits. That's Arthur, her husband, is a playwright, is like a writer on this film.
Okay. And their marriage is already tanking.
Yeah. Yeah, down the drain.
Yeah.
Going down the drain. So dick move. He writes her role to be like he's in a relationship with the set photographer of this film that they're filming. Okay. And he like writes her role to be kind of shit. Like, I think she's a divorcee and there's three cowboys. I forget.
Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood. I feel like Clint Eastwood's in this film.
I was last night with Charles, we were sitting in. I was like, Clint Eastwood's still alive.
Dude, he's still alive. Crazy. And he's like.
Yeah. And he's still going.
Like,
he's
still going, like making films and such. Yeah.
It's wild. Anyway, sorry.
So Arthur writes her role as a divorcee to kind of like backhand slap her, you know, in this role. Mm-hmm. And alongside three cowboys, and he's having this relationship with the set photographer. And that's when he writes in her notes. And then Marilyn finds the notes, like expressing that she's a whore, and that makes her like super disappointed in herself for the marriage failing. And again, like more rejection.
But he was also having affairs. Like, that's what I hate about this kind of stuff, is it's like, yeah.
I don't know if she did it first. I don't know if it's like a tit for tat situation. I don't like that. And it doesn't make it right either way.
No.
She just had that. I think he was really hurt when she had that affair with her other co-star in that Let's Make Love movie. And so then he kind of gets back at her, or the marriage is over really, hooks up with the set photographer. So her role sucks. Her life's kind of falling apart again. She's in pain a lot. This is insane. She has so many health issues. Like, I get she's on a lot of different drugs, but who needs a gallbladder? She has a gallbladder issue. She has gallstones, and she's in so much pain that like ups her drug addiction, and they have to use a lot of makeup to like mask this. They say that they were applying, like, she was in so much pain that they applied her makeup while she was asleep, like under the influence of barbiturates, like sleeping pills and downers.
Wow.
So, because she's in so much pain. So either way, whether it's drug abuse or pain, she's again using a lot, and she has to spend a week in the hospital for detox. Basically, marriage number two-ish. Yeah. Well, three, celebrity marriage number two, number three is over.
Yeah.
In January 1961, and get this, they just like, this is a little side note. They get a Mexican divorce. Do you know what that is?
No.
Oh my God. I just listened to a whole podcast on this. It's so nuts that like divorce law was so behind the times, literally all the way into the 60s, right? Even more so, even later, that it was easier to go to Mexico and get a divorce. There's like some states where like you could hire an actress to pretend that she was your husband's mistress, because you could only get a dissolution of marriage if there was like an affair. And so they literally have to get a Mexican. She's freaking Marilyn Monroe, and she has to go to Mexico to get a divorce.
That's so wild.
Mark this on your calendars. It's the same day that JFK is inaugurated.
Oh.
She's like, divorce and JFK is inaugurated.
The general.
We'll see.
Or maybe it's Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah. We are going to cover this. It just is interesting, like the timelines.
Yeah.
Because again, I feel like, alleged. We all say alleged because she was definitely tied to both JFK and Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah.
You know, basically her marriage falls apart. They're divorced, rejected. again, you know. So instead of working in 1961, she spends the first 6 months, like she has health issues. She actually has her gallbladder removed, a surgery for that. She has surgery for her endometriosis, and she's spent in the 4 weeks in the hospital for depression. So as shitty as Joe DiMaggio was, he like kind of comes to back around as a friend and helps her, like they kind of rekindle a friendship, and he's kind of there for her for that.
I'm surprised she was able to get diagnosed with endometriosis when even today it's hard as a woman to get diagnosed with endometriosis.
Right. I mean, she had so many miscarriages and like a topic pregnancy that maybe they were like, hey, you got some issues. Let's take a look. And it's so sad because she just wants a family. They say like if she had to choose between her career and a child, she would have chosen a child. Like there was like no choice. She was like, yep, she just really wanted a family.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, I feel like we can talk about this because it's medical, but endometriosis is where your the tissue from your uterus, like from the inside, is starting to grow outside, even on other organs. And it's just extremely painful because that's tissue that's supposed to be like protected by your organs that's suddenly on the outside where it shouldn't be. So just to let you know if you don't know that. And it's got to be pretty far progressed for her to have had surgery to remove some of that tissue because, it does take them a while to diagnose it even today.
And she had something like 23 or 30, I don't remember the exact number, gallstones. Like that's insanely painful too. So no wonder she was in a lot of pain. And they said like she was just able to turn it on in front of the cameras and in front of the press, but she was in pain a lot of the time through this time. So I mentioned like Joe makes another appearance in her life kind of through friendship. And she actually dates his friend, Frank Sinatra.
Oh my God, girlfriend.
With the Rat Pack here. I know, it's so nuts to think like all of these like major names like she crossed paths with. Yeah. And she just died so young that like it's just like a capsule.
Then isn't that interesting because she's passing paths with all these people. Frank Sinatra was very much involved with the mob.
Well, we will get to that. I know. Yeah. I'm so sorry. This is such a long episode, but it's so crazy. Because you have to know all this history. You have to know how she got there. Like she's just, okay, so she crosses, she dates Frank Sinatra a little bit, the Rat Pack. This is cool because she actually in 1961 buys her first house.
Okay.
The house she later passes in.
And that house is owned by a TikToker now. I don't know if you know this, Jasmine Chiswell. Yeah. And she actually was dressing in vintage fashion and she models herself an awful lot like Marilyn. Now, since she's had her own family, she's kind of getting away from that and she still has amazing content on the app. But I do think it's interesting that this woman who was kind of modeling herself after Marilyn now owns this house and is kind of keeping it in the same way it was kept. Crazy. Anyways,
So it's actually kind of like her psychiatrist's daughter again, like hearing from Joan. It's so sweet to hear her be like, yeah, my dad talked to her about having becoming a homeowner, and that had really never occurred to Marilyn because again, like that's the man that's like making this home. And she's like, nope, she's such an independent woman. She buys her own home and she like feels like this is her opportunity to plant roots and like start a sense of like family, right? So you first buy the home. So that's how she gets that home that she later passes in. But we're closing in on the end of this because really 1962, she films Something's Gotta Give where she did a press stunt. If you've seen, it's the movie that never gets finished. She's like swimming nude in the pool.
Oh, yeah.
It's like another one of those press like stunts kind of like to come and get them, get their photos for this film. But that's really what later on is published in Life magazine because they never finished that film. Mm-hmm. And she's like frequently sick and missing from the set. But she rallies, she goes to New York for JFK's birthday.
But can you imagine being Jackie O sitting in the crowd?
Hell and like, no.
I might have ripped her blonde hair out of her head. Like that's literally.
Hell no. I think it's so insane to think that's what I was saying to someone. I was like, it's so insane to think that like affairs were so public, like they're this like secret, but they're not a secret at all.
It's an open secret.
Like the wife knows. It's an open secret.
How embarrassing to be the wife and just be like, oh my God, like are you kidding me?
Humiliating. Like, the way, so humiliating.
Yeah, and the breathy Mr. President. I would be like, I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah,
I will rip you off the stage. But back then it was so like I was talking about another affair last night too, and I was just like, Oh, with Queen Elizabeth. I'm on the Queen Elizabeth thing now because she recently passed. Like Prince Philip definitely philandered, like when she was young and everything. But then,
absolutely,
yes. And then when her own son is doing it, she's just like to Diana, like she's just like chill out, like it's normal. And I'm like, it shouldn't be.
It's not
like,
okay.
I understand where Diana's coming from. I'm losing my mind. Anyways, yeah,
it's so nuts because she's like the sex symbol, and then at the same time, like so closeted for this affair because you have Jackie O, right, who's like prim, proper, prestigious, and then you have Marilyn Monroe, who's like also like Hollywood's darling, but like a sex symbol. And it's like so insane that they're in the same room. Not only are they in the same room, they're sleeping with the same man. So this is where she goes to JFK's birthday gala, Madison Square Garden. She sings the happy birthday, Mr. President. And we're going to circle back to this probably on Patreon, but the dress, the famous dress,
the one that Kim's definitely ripped. I don't even care what that stupid lie detector test. And that's some tea that's going on because now we know that Kim sold that sex tape. But anyways,
we are going to get to that in Patreon because there is not time for this. Stay with me here. The dress, the beige skin tight covered in rhinestones dress. There's also, we're going to come back to this photo too. There's a photo, the only photo of her with the Kennedys, with Bobby and JFK. That's the only photo of her with them ever. Come back to that. And she's in that dress.
That's a dress and a half.
That basically catches you up on her life. We're going to fast forward to August 4th. It's the night of August 4th, 1962. Marilyn's housekeeper, Eunice Murray, is overnight there. She wakes up at 3 a.m. She thinks something's wrong. And she goes to Marilyn's room. She knocks at her door. She sees a light under the door, but she doesn't get a response. So she immediately calls Marilyn's psychiatrist that we've been talking about, Dr. Ralph Greenson, who's, he's like on call for her, like, right? You know, like he's brought her into her family. So he dashes over. He's only like a mile and a half away. He looks through a window and sees that she's lying there. And this is what's reported, right? So like lying there face down on the bed. He breaks through the window, breaks in, finds her clutching a phone in her hand. And he tells Eunice through the door, "We've lost her." So this is where things get inky, right? Like who was actually there? How did this really go down? Like he in his notes has said like it attributes it to being like this orphan girl rejection. And that's why like he vouches that, probably was a probable suicide. There's her sleeping pills and barbiturates found by her bedside. They also call her actual physician, Dr. Engelberg. See, again, like this gets inky. Like, was he on the other side of the door? Was he actually there? Like, what happens?
Yeah.
At 3:50, 4:25. Like, the media reports, here's the story they're sticking with, pronounces her dead 4:25. That's when, like, LAPD is notified 4:25. She's only 36, and they pronounce her dead.
And then LAPD is inky as well, just with everything. But
this is mysterious.
Yeah.
For sure. As if any of her like whole life wasn't mysterious to begin with. Like she has so much happening.
There was something on TikTok too about the way her room was. I think they were moving things around or it just seemed to tell me things. Cause there was something I saw recently and I was like,
there's a lot.
I don't know.
So meanwhile, one of her lawyers, Milton Rudin, Mickey, rushes over. He handles matters on the phone. He's her attorney. Her publicist, Arthur Jacobs, is pulled out of the Hollywood Bowl from a concert, runs over. We'll get to this. And they think Marilyn died sometime between 8:30 p.m., 10:30 p.m., August 4th. She's found at like 3 a.m. The next morning, so August 5th. Okay. And the toxicology report, of course, shows it's acute barbiturate poisoning. So she has like lethal levels of this. And then the sleeping pill, Nembutal. So that's what like is known, like, okay, she died of an overdose of Nembutal. Mm-hmm. And empty medicine bottles are found in her bed, and her autopsy report claims countless pills, except for there's no pills in her stomach. Like, yeah. So we'll come back to that, sis, right? Mm-hmm. The possibility that she accidentally died as an overdose is ruled out because those dosages are so high. They're like, no, that had to be like intentional.
Okay.
So they rule it a probable suicide. So her doctors also, I mentioned, like they say, yeah, we've been treating her for years. She has frequent depression. She's prone to severe like fears and breakdown. She's been hospitalized, obviously, for barbiturates before. She has unpredictable mood changes. Like this is all adding up to probable suicide.
Yeah. Okay.
Except for there's a lot of suspicious things that happened. So this is where the conspiracy theories come in, right? This is why this is so mysterious to me and everybody. So in 1973, Norman Mailer writes a book called Marilyn, A Biography. Okay. And it's like got so many conspiracy theories in it. It's like widespread enough that the LA County District Attorney opens up her, they like, quote, open up her case. They conduct a threshold investigation in 1982 to see like, hey, do we really need to open this back up for like a criminal investigation?
Yeah.
And that's where this like Anthony Summers, author of Goddess, like who's like the main guy in this, the Netflix doc, The Mystery of Marilyn Monroe, The Unheard Tapes, comes in. That's why in 1982, he's like, I was called into like this investigation, you know, to be like, what do you know? He's like, I started interviewing people. He interviews 1,000 people and tape and records 650 interviews. So it was so interesting to like, once you know about her life, hear these tapes of people that's like, oh, that's, you know, that's Eunice, the housekeeper. Oh, that's the doctor's daughter that she was talking with and making mentions of this, these people. So what is heard on that tape? If it's not suicide, before we just like deep dive into the conspiracy theories, was it murder? That's part of like these conspiracies. Was she murdered to like silence her for something? Was it the mafia? Was it the Kennedys? Was it freaking Cuba?
Yeah. Like, and why? Speaking of the mafia is involved with the Kennedys too, not just the Sinatras. So yeah, it's like a whole
the Rat Pack. Okay. Yeah. So sketch. So here's a few theories, and one kind of predominantly prevails. So we're going to follow that thread. We're going to like pull that thread.
Okay.
Okay. The Kennedys. Mm-hmm. We say alleged. She was definitely like all of these people can vouch that she was associated with the Kennedys, meaning JFK and Bobby, Robert. I love how they all have these like little nicknames, Pat for Patrick and like Bobby for Robert. Jack was John. I didn't know that was like a nickname. Okay. But Jack is JFK. And one of the nicknames is the General for Bobby because
Bobby.
Bobby. So she's purported to be around and associated with JFK, but that's too sketch because of Jackie O. So mostly with Bobby, but yes, definitely around JFK.
Yeah.
Take that for what it's worth because Dean Martin's wife, Jean Martin, Jean and Dean.
That's cute.
She was. The Kennedys have this, they have a sister, right? And Pat is married to Peter. Peter Lawford's an actor, and he's part of Frank Sinatra's Rat Pack.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So just remember Peter Lawford has a house in Malibu, and this is like the go-to for parties. So it wouldn't be like unheard of for Marilyn to have been there for a party, but she's there a lot. She's like lunching, she's calling, she's there a lot. And Dean Martin's wife, remember Jean, says, now there's nothing discreet. Like Peter Lawford, so like JFK and Bobby's sister Pat's husband, so their brother-in-law, is like known for like pimping for the Kennedys. He's like, she's like, yeah, I had a hand up my shirt at one point. Like he's like hunting for women for the Kennedy brothers. Oh, and you have to remember the Kennedy brothers have their father. I think his name is Joe.
He's gross.
He's like associated with Hollywood, and he's like known for like having people wait in the lobby because he has like women in his office. It's icky.
Yeah.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Allow your imagination to be piqued by stories that are brought to life through captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. As an Audible member, you'll be able to keep your heart rate up month after month because you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. If you're in the mood for a shocking psychological thriller, check out None of This Is True by Lisa Jewell. Embrace brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So, yeah, like it's basically everyone's known secret that she's with Bobby, mostly. Mm-hmm. Probably JFK, but we'll stick with Bobby. Mm-hmm. And Peter's tied back into the Rat Pack. So we get back into that thread. You pull it a little bit more. Jimmy Hoffa is a known mobster. He's with the Teamsters Union, which is like a truckers union, and has clear mafia ties. He's like pulled in for all these other investigations related to the mafia. They're like tapping, you know, they're like bugging and tapping his phone.
Wires.
And so like part of the conspiracy is like, oh, did he try to silence or blackmail? Did he try to blackmail the Kennedys through Maryland by like the bug and wiretaps at Peter Lawford's where she was having this affair. Mm-hmm. You know, Bobby has a wife and kids too.
Yeah.
So like, is Jimmy Hoffa behind this to blackmail the Kennedys? Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of like, put a little bookmark in that.
Yeah.
In this tapes, I found this super interesting. Angie Novello is Bobby Kennedy's personal secretary. He's like, yeah, Marilyn used to call here all the time as she's just like calling. He's like, yeah, okay. So she was definitely associated with the Kennedys. We could just like check that box.
Yeah.
Back to who else is sus in her background? Member Arthur?
Arthur Miller. Yeah, Arthur? Mr. Communist. Yeah.
The FBI have a file on Marilyn because she's married to him. Remember him?
Yeah.
And he, so through him, she's like mingling and like whining and dining, you know, with left-wing communist expats. And at this time, Cuba, Fidel Castro, you know him,
is
appealing to the Soviet Union for military help. So we have Marilyn, who's associated with communists and through her ex-husband, but also associated with the Kennedys. So like, pick a side. But she's like left, very left viewed. Mm-hmm. And there's like in the FBI file, this is like where it got cool. There's an unnamed informant who days before she lunches at Peter Lawford's Malibu house, that note to in the FBI files talking about how Marilyn's discussing the morality of atomic bomb testing with
Marilyn.
The Kennedys. Marilyn, no, don't talk politics. Even her psychiatrist's family was like, she used to ask us like what, like she wants to seem more intelligent about these political conversations. What like kinds of things can she bring up around the Kennedys to like endear herself to like the Kennedys and seem like intelligent about these political matters. So she brings up atomic bomb testing literally days later. After this lunch at Peter Lawford's, Bobby Kennedy is going to Nevada to witness nuclear weapons testing. And I am something like, oh, that's when they were like, oh, shit, she's a political liability. We should. Yeah. So like the conspiracy theory, we'll say a conspiracy theory, right? Like about murdering her to silence her because she's tied to communism and Cuba and nuclear warfare. And that's like so close to Florida, right? So, you know, everyone's up in arms, the Cold War. It's that time for you can't have loose lips and Marilyn would be a political threat.
Yeah.
Possible. Like that could make sense if that's
definitely
like, if there
definitely
was more to support that, right? Like it's
we
sketchy.
Were so scared we were gonna go to war too. Like my mom even remembers like having to hide under desks and put gas masks on and everything else just in case, you know.
Yeah, that's so nuts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's a big deal at this time. And she's so close to the Kennedys. Obviously, she's like lunching and sleeping with Bobby.
At least.
And they're like, no, no, we have to cut this off. So Bobby tells her, do not contact him or John anymore. Ouch.
Okay.
Like that has hurt. Again, back to like she's been hurt and ghosted and rejected by so many men in her past that on the phone, her last conversation with Peter Lawford.
Okay.
Because that's where she meets. So, you know, obviously he's the brother-in-law to the Kennedys. So on the phone, she ends their last conversation by saying, say goodbye to Pat, which is his wife. Say goodbye to the president and say goodbye to yourself because you're a nice guy. So like there's no suicide note, but she's saying goodbyes.
Or is she like threatening she'd blow the lid off of?
I don't know.
That's
so
it.
Like, so hard to know. Like, I know, right? Mm-hmm. So here's where I feel like the most, okay, internet and Patreons, I can't wait to discuss this with you. Challenge me because here's all I know. Here's what I feel is most reasonable. And I can't wait to hear what you have to say to Danielle about this. Arthur Jacobs, back to Arthur Jacobs, her publicist, right?
Okay.
His job is to like make this disappear or like rewrite the narrative. So her publicist was married. He has a widow because he eventually passes, Natalie Jacobs, who says on that night, Marilyn's the 4th/5th, they were at the Hollywood Bowl at a concert, and an attendant comes and, you know, like notifies her husband, the publicist Arthur, that he has a phone call. And she's like, oh, so we were headed home. I was headed home at 10:30 and he was headed to Marilyn's. He had something to take care of at Marilyn's. This is at 10:30 on the 4th. So he goes to Marilyn's and she, Natalie, the widow, says this was his job to fudge the timeline. So what if she didn't really die at like 3 a.m. on the 5th? What if that's just when they call LAPD?
Huh.
Get this. So she claims that, nope, Natalie knows we left the concert at 10:30. He went to Marilyn's. She was alive. Like there was something happening at Marilyn's at 10:30 or 11 on the 4th.
Okay.
Not just Natalie says this. Juilliard Roswell, they substantiate this. They're like, yeah, he was there at 11. There was something happening 11 to 3. Then we get to like, well, who else was at the house, right?
Yeah.
An ambulance, actually. An ambulance, you know, like private ambulance companies, celebrities use them. It's also sometimes hospital systems use them. Ken Hunter is an ambulance attendant. He says he goes to Marilyn Monroe's house at 11, not 3 a.m. If we're sticking with the housekeeper story of Eunice knocking on the door at 3 a.m., I didn't know. Like, what's going on? Why would everyone be rushing to Marilyn's house at 11 on the 4th? So Ken Hunter's an ambulance attendant. Not only the ambulance attendant, Anthony, the guy in the documentary, goes and interviews the ambulance company owner, Walt Schaefer, who's like, yeah, we took her in our, like in the logs, we took her to the Santa Monica to the emergency room at Santa Monica Hospital at night. She was comatose. So this is like the kind of the first time where like Marilyn might have left the house. She would have been alive and comatose, but they say another person, a friend of Dr. Greenson, psychiatrist, says that Dr. Greenson told him at lunch, yeah, she died in the ambulance. We took her back to the house, like to avoid this media scandal of her dying at a hospital or dying in the ambulance. So they take her back to the house.
That's so wild.
But why would they be trying to avoid a media scandal? That doesn't sound that scandalous. People die in
hospitals, you know, in LA hospitals all the time.
Yeah.
We just talked about River Phoenix and everything. Like,
Why? Because why did they need to buy time and not say that she died at like 10:30 or 11 that night in the ambulance? It's because this journalist is like unraveling this thread. He's like, where was Bobby Kennedy that night? Why do we need to buy time? Mm-hmm. Well, so Bill Woodford, this journalist, asked that question. He gets like shut down. That story gets killed.
Really?
But per this FBI agent, Bobby was in town and left. And that journalist, Bill Woodfield, goes and interviews. He's like got the suspicion that Bobby Kennedy was around. Like he's he's known to have been at Peter Lawford's house that weekend. But like, whoo, we're just erasing history. Like, yeah, we're pretending he was never here. They buy time, possibly have bought time by like a helicopter had a log of dropping Bobby Kennedy off at like an airport to catch a flight to San Francisco, I believe. So they may have, I'm just using this. This is like the most plausible conspiracy, I guess, to me, may have needed that time to get Bobby the hell out of LA, like get him out of Malibu, get him away from her because they didn't want any political scandal of like, well, she died, but he was like, where was he? So they just want to like erase it. There's tapes recorded that day of her death. Cause remember they were like bugging for mafia reasons and political reasons.
Yeah.
Bugging Peter Lawford's house. So there's tapes of Bobby being at the house that day. And this is what is reported to have happened. So the most plausible thing to me, that she kind of gets in like a fight with Bobby, you know, Bobby rejects her and then he calls her actually from the Lawford's house. You know, he's like into this booty call situation. So he calls her and she's like, get out of here with that. She feels used. She feels passed around. So she like stirs up the dust. They call it like making a stink because she's heartbroken. She feels lied to and used. And so I guess maybe that day she calls the White House and she's like, get your brother away from me. How cool to just be able to call up JFK. But like,
get this guy
brother away from me. I'm not his like toy. And so maybe Bobby wanted to erase history and erase ties with pushing her to be upset and commit suicide.
Yeah.
Because that would have been political scandal that he would have been tied to her at all. And obviously she's like Hollywood's darling too at this time. So her death is scandalous in and of itself. They're like, we'll just make this easy. She died in the ambulance, but like, let's take her back to the house. We'll pretend she died at 3 a.m. You weren't even here. You were never here. Hop on a flight. So I guess that's kind of like where the documentary wraps, is like the most plausible thing. I've also like, again, listened to some of these tapes, looked at other sources. The FBI and LA, when they opened up her case again, they were like, they don't suspect foul play. I get their suspicious details. Cool. Tell us in the comments, because I get it. I can't justify some of these other things. Like, why were there no pills in her stomach?
Yeah. Doesn't make any
why
sense.
Why is there this like mysterious mark? Like, was she injected with those lethal cocktail like that killed her? Okay, I cannot explain it. I'm just saying that this would make sense, that like Bobby wanted to get away from the scandal and was like, buy me some time. And that like her death, although it's like a suicide, was a cover up of how it actually happened. Could be, could happen.
Could be.
Eunice does know. She's like, the housekeeper. Eunice was like, he was here that afternoon. And that's why they were trying to protect the Kennedys. You don't want his name in this. And get this, back to that photo of her in that dress with the Kennedy brothers.
Yeah.
There's like different records of like people coming in and grabbing documents and like that gave them time to cleanse the house too. They're like, of course she has a diary or something or a note about the Kennedys. Yeah. They threw out or like all these photos, you know, she was with them all the time at these parties.
So why is there only one?
That is the only photo of her with the Kennedys.
Doesn't make any sense. Yeah, no.
So it would make sense that it would be like a cover up, a cleansing of like for political, like mitigating political scandals that maybe her death didn't actually happen at 3 a.m. It happened more towards like 10:30, 11. And they need to buy some time to get Bobby out of there. Yeah, I don't know, though, but we got mafia, sex, politics, like a little bit of everything in this. And it's still a mystery. Like, there's no official story except for the official story that she died at 3 a.m. There's no there's like nothing. Nope. It says, I also came across like another podcast that had said like the deputy coroner who signed her death certificate did so under duress. Which would make sense there. He's like, no, she died at like 10, but you make me sign that she died at 3. And that's kind of also like why they reopened to examine in 1982, this like case, if there's any criminal negligence, or responsibility or criminal conduct. But yeah, basically we circle back to it's a probable suicide. And maybe in reality it was, but the circumstances of her death were like a cover up.
Yeah.
And in the documentary, if you actually like make it through all of the tapes and you've made it this long in our podcast, it's crazy because he interviews Peter Lawler. Like years later, sounds so remorseful. He says he sounds like just like a piece of the man he used to be. He's like, I checked with the operator and they told me that her number was out of order. It's off the hook. I should have known better. So he feels like guilty and remorse for being involved too.
Man.
Yeah. So what do you think?
It's such
a mystery still, but hopefully that gives a little bit more of what could have happened. I feel so sad that she was like so used.
Young and so used. Yeah, I have always thought it was not a straight up suicide. I've always thought, especially since I got obsessed with the Kennedys in like 2010, 2011, 2012, I've always thought the Kennedys, there was something, whether they were involved, they knew about it, or she knew something. I had always heard that they were like on the midst of breaking up and that she had like threatened something, that was enough to make the Secret Service. And like, you know, because you have to think they have all of these people at their command, and it's not just the Secret Service. They've got the mob, they've got everyone. So it's like, oh, you don't want the lid blown off of things. Pillow talk with the president, I'm sure, is not all innocent. I'm sure you're hearing some crazy stuff. Like, that's when men actually tell you things that are like bothering them.
Well, that's what they were like, oh my God, wait, her ex-husband Arthur is a communist and she's asking about nuclear warfare, but she has this open FBI file. Like, and then who wants to hush her? Everybody wants to hush her.
Everybody. Yeah, that's what makes it interesting to me, is that I had never known that she had that FBI file opened with Arthur. So that's like a whole other can of worms, because it makes me think like she is already on the government's radar. So that it's wild. And then you think of too, like, what, I mean, we could do an entire episode on the CIA and the crazy shit that they've done, and
there's no wiretaps of Peter Lawler's house, and like it's just kind of nuts that wait, were they tapping for mafia reasons? Like, the mafia at some point was like trying to extort the Kennedys. Like, they were like, maybe we'll extort the Kennedys by exposing this affair with Marilyn. Maybe they wanted to silence her from because she's on these wiretaps and she could be on Team Kennedy. Like, it's so crazy. And that's where we land. Absolutely. Like, it's so exciting. Like I mentioned, Blonde comes out on Netflix.
Yes.
It's like a docudrama, really. It's like a dramatized version of her life. But have you watched the trailer?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's going to be amazing to watch in and of itself. And I can't wait to see what they dramatize versus now we kind of know like at least some of the history that actually happens.
Yeah.
I'm so pumped to watch it and then talk about it with our patrons.
I'm so excited. So I can't wait for tomorrow with our live stream with our patrons. That's going to be great. Big Q&A and everything. And I'll be able to, in the meantime, like, refresh myself on my Marilyn Monroe history.
Oh my God. And then dig in, because hell, it comes back. Like, Kim K wears that dress to the Met Gala. Okay. She actually only wears it to go up the stairs. But yeah, they're like, all these Marilyn Monroe historians are like, she damaged it. Like, was there damage before? Did she damage it? Like, it was made for Marilyn Monroe. Well, like, it wasn't made for Kim.
So Kris Jenner did that interview with, I can't remember who, and they pulled a lie detector out. Did you see that this week?
I came across that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And supposedly she said that like, no, the dress wasn't ripped, and they proved that as truthful. However, that whole lie detector test is garbage, because now Ray J has come out and said, no, it's trash, because she said she didn't sell the sex tape, and there's a freaking contract of us selling the sex tape. So it's just,
they are good with media.
Good with media.
There's so much. Like, please Google, so we can talk about it. The hair. Like, that she's gifted by Ripley's, believe it or not.
Oh,
and she's Marilyn's like, hair. I'm going to sleep with it.
Yeah.
For voodoo. Mm. Okay. And then, like, maybe it's not even Marilyn's real hair, because then her hairstylist comes out and is like, that's not her hair. That's a wig.
Yeah.
So it's like fake Marilyn hair drama. And why the hell is Kim trying to sleep with Marilyn's hair, anyways?
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. I know for myself, since transitioning to a working from home environment, the importance of taking care of your own mental health. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You'll be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours.
Now, it's not a crisis line and it's not self-help. It is professional therapy done securely online. The service is available for clients worldwide, and you can log into your account anytime, day or night, to message your therapist.
It's more affordable than traditional in-person therapy, and financial aid is available.
You can visit their website and read other clients' testimonials that are posted daily.
Visit betterhelp.com/ITT, that's better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
And for listeners of Innocent Till Tipsy, you can go to their website and get an additional 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/ITT.
That's betterhelp, H-E-L-P.com/ITT.
It's so weird. I don't know. Yeah. And have you noticed the Kardashians are getting skinnier and skinnier and skinnier, like every second you look at them? I don't know what's going
skims.
On, but it's Skims.
Promo for Skims.
God, that would be an interesting episode to deep dive into those women, because man, they are resourceful, they are wild, but my God, yeah.
Yeah. If anyone's as tied to, like, ingrained with Hollywood and sex and scandal like the Kardashians, they got a lot on their books.
They sure do. Yeah. Wow. Ugh, what an episode.
That's what I know. I know. My God. Like, now you know why I had to start at the beginning. Like, she was literally abandoned, rejected, like, mm-hmm. used yeah. her whole life. It's so sad. And she just
so
wanted
much...
to be part, like, accepted and loved.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have so much more to say on this that we don't have time for today. So ooh. I'll save it for Patreon.
Can't wait.
But yeah, that was a great, great episode. Thank you for researching
awesome.
That.
All right. Well, wow. How's your wine? It still good?
It's gone. It's always delicious. Thank you, Snoop.
No. Mine's delicious. Thanks, Dow.
Good.
Yay.
Awesome. Oh,
well, until next time.
Cheers. Yeah.
Huda Media Production.